You like the Star Wars? Well, we do too here at the Randcore Pit, which is the home of myself and the giggling Salacious Grom over there.
You can hear me giggling?
Yeah, I could. I don't know if anybody else could, but now they know.
It's just like the intro, how you just go right into it. Like, I love how you multitask. On the one hand, you're running this empire called the JCU on the one hand, and then like you can immediately just switch gears and jump right into a podcast.
Oh, I know. It's
you're like the Don Corleone of podcasting.
What's been amazing is, you know, when we started this one, it was biweekly because there was no way I was going to have two weekly podcasts. I already had one.
You were so adamant about that. Oh, I remember that way back when. Back a year ago.
Yes, indeed. Just over a year ago now. Wow. And, you know, yeah, that was just, there was no way. I couldn't possibly work that in. Now I have, thanks to the Randcor Pit Live, two weekly shows, plus one of them now is weekly, plus once a month, a live show for Hey Kids Comics. So.
It's just crazy. And that's the only reason why I'm doing the Salacious Crumb giggling over here.
Ah, okay, yeah, sure. You realize, yeah, here we are yet again.
I know, week, exactly. Show. Exactly.
So with that all said, we now have, we're here this week, this particular episode, this outing. Our focus is, oddly enough, going to be on focusing on focus collecting, as it is a term that I encountered more recently than pretty much any other terms about collecting. But also the fact that, you know, a lot of times on the show, we've done shows about collecting collectibles. We've talked about our own collections.
Yeah.
The realm of what do you think of when you hear collectibles? You know, we're talking about Star Wars collectibles. And it occurred to us, you know, a lot of times people are thinking about the toys and action figures, for example.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, certain things like statues or, you know, very specific tactile things.
Yeah.
And we don't often think about a lot of the just tonnage of other things that fit that bill. And that's kind of where we wanted to head with this. And we, Eddie had put this forward. We put it on the schedule. We kind of forgot where we were headed.
Yeah.
We reminded ourselves where we were headed, and now we've come full circle. So here we are.
And we can always talk about collectibles. That's just that's an easy topic for us because there's no end to our love of collecting Star Wars stuff, or any kind of collectibles for that matter. It doesn't have to be Star Wars stuff, but, and it's funny, Cole, that you mentioned that because I remember, I always talked to all these other fans and collectors at, the conventions. And it's so funny, like you were saying, how everyone has a different idea when you say the word collectibles, as far as Star Wars.
Yes.
And, one, you know, we've talked with one person who, his thing, when I mentioned collectibles to him, this is at Alcon, he immediately went to the Topps trading cards.
Of course, yeah, that's a good point there. It's, you know, for a lot of people, the things like that, like Topps and other companies' trading cards.
And I think, in talking to him, what the big deal was with him was the trading cards were cheap and easy to collect. And, I mean, what do you think of when you harken back to those days of the trading cards? Because for me personally, it was kind of like the same thing. They were inexpensive. As a kid, it was exciting to get a pack of cards. I collected baseball cards anyway. So then to also get a pack of Star Wars trading cards was a pretty big deal because it was always exciting to open up that wax pack and not know exactly which cards you were going to get.
Exactly. Yeah, because, you know, you'd get in there and part of that was the challenge. You know, literally, like, you know, you'd open a pack and like, oh, got it. And then finally you'd find that one or two that you're missing. And it was the thrill of the hunt. But it was an inexpensive hunt. You could afford to get a few packs every week or so.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's one of those rare collectibles where it's at least feasible to keep at it again and again.
Yeah. And but even early on, I remember just getting those first few packs and just kind of being amazed at the imagery, you know, because Star Wars was so new. And I know, at least, you know, for me, you had the excitement of seeing Star Wars on the screen, but then it was rare back in those days to just see the images of from the movie here and there. It wasn't like we had access to the internet or an archive per se, where you could just pull up images, you know, at will from the movie, from A New Hope. So I think that was part of the excitement of the trading cards as a kid for me, was getting to relive the movie in these little images. And and not to mention you got that nice stick of gum.
Oh yeah, you got that. You weren't really sure how you were supposed to eat it. You know, if you kind of like snapped it into a few pieces, you could probably get it soften up enough in your mouth to then turn into chewing gum, or you could just go all in, like tearing a Band-Aid off and just start crunching down.
Yeah.
Let all those little shards just form together into a wad over time.
I know. That was a weird thing. I remember, and maybe it was because of the age that I was collecting the cards, I remember being excited to get that piece of gum, but then as a collector, I don't know if you ever ran across this. I ran across this later on, where you would buy the wax packs in the collector's market, and that stupid stick of gum created that little stain on the back of the card that
there was always the one card that got ruined, and
had that rectangular stain. And I remember, this is not Star Wars related, but it is trading cards related. I remember buying Magnum PI trading cards, and
I didn't realize there were Magnum PI trading cards. But that's how little I really ultimately cared about Magnum PI as a genre of collectible.
I believe there were Magnum PI cards, if I remember.
There might have been. I mean, there have been cards that existed in years past that shocked me.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Mainly because I hooked them up to electricity, but
whatever.
It was this weird thing I do.
Yeah.
Trading cards.
Other kids stuck them in their spokes of their bikes.
That's right. I stuck them in the outlet with a piece of aluminum foil.
But it seemed like in this particular case, they stuck the gum on the front side of the card, so it was the top card that got ruined. And so it would yank off part of the photo of the front of the card. Well, anyway, that's beside the point. But it was just like the trading cards was an exciting thing for me to collect as a kid, you know. And later on, and we refer to them as, you know, the dark times, where you were just jonesing for something to collect that was Star Wars. And this, you know, being in the 90s, what came out about that time were the Star Wars Pogs. And
and in a way, that was sort of a weird period where there were still some trading cards, but Pogs were literally poised to take over the world as far as anyone could tell.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Pogs was such a big deal. I remember at the time I was working at MJ Designs, and so the whole Pog craze hit us pretty hard, you know, where we had the big wash bins that you would normally fill up with water and, you know, let the horses come and drink water out of, but instead we bought those for the store and just filled them up with
Yes, I remember seeing those. And, you know, it's kind of funny because there was a back in the heyday of Pogs, literally there was a company that used to do like all kinds of trading cards, and they dropped everything but Pogs because they really genuinely thought, and I thought, oh, that is the worst idea.
Oh, man. But even though the Star Wars Pogs came later, even then, it's just like it harkened back to those days where I had to get the whole set. And yeah, you were saying that we did have the Star Wars Tops cards, the art cards, which were a big deal also, which is also a big part of my collection. But it was just something about those stupid Pogs that I had to get all the Pogs, all the Slammers, and everything. So that's definitely a part of my Star Wars collection that I keep tucked away back in the closet.
See, you don't really actively show off the fact that you You were a POG collector at one point?
No, not so much, not so much. But I am still, you know, I still have a soft place in my, whatever, in my heart for POGs.
For in your moist side of the forest for
yeah.
POGs.
Yeah, anyway.
But, you know, that does bring up a point about, you know, what's interesting is the different genre of collecting.
Yeah.
Star Wars has become basically, you know, it's touched so many aspects of collecting. And one of the interesting things about that, you know, you talk about the trading card collecting, there are people who collect things not because they're specific to something like Star Wars or Magnum PI, but because they're that thing.
Yeah.
And it's one of those interesting things. The author of the Star Wars Super Collector's Wish book told me one time that plate people, you know, like ceramic dish collectible plates, were angry with his pricing because they were at odds with the pricing in plate collecting books.
Really?
Because he was concentrating solely on, you know, resourcing pricing from Star Wars angles, not from a universal plate resale angle.
Oh, okay.
And I hadn't thought about the fact that people who probably don't care so much about the fact that it's a Star Wars plate, but that it's a plate. So it's right there with, you know, the 50 states and the, you know, child stars of the 20s and things like that.
Oh, so you got your Shirley Temple and then you have your Sindel from the Ewoks movie just side by side on plates. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. So it was one of those things, you know, that really got me thinking. Yeah, that's funny because I'm sure there are like salt and pepper shaker collectors, or you know, a more recent phenomenon, Star Wars Nutcracker collectors, who have Star Wars Nutcrackers. But if you like walk in their collection, your Star Wars eyes zeroed in on Boba Fett or Vader Nutcrackers or whatever. I don't know if there's a Boba Fett Nutcracker, but there's definitely
there
a Vader.
There ought to be if there's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, there is. But, you know, you would zero in on that. You're like, oh, are you a Star Wars fan? And then your focus would start to expand. You'd realize, no, there's, like, traditional, you know, soldiery nutcracker, you know, whatever.
The soldiery nutcracker.
That bizarre, like, Russian soldier or whatever he's supposed to be.
Uh-huh.
And,
Oh man, I just pictured, you know, the Star Wars nutcrackers. Well, the traditional ones, how they had the furry Russian hat, like you were mentioning, but it being Chewbacca. You know, it replaced the furry hat with just Chewbacca's head.
Okay.
But anyways.
But yeah, the thing about it, you know, then all of a sudden you would notice they have like all these different kinds of Easter, or you know, Easter and Christmas nutcrackers and different animals, different presidents or whatever.
Uh-huh. And, president.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm spitballing. I don't know anything about collectible nutcrackers. But I do know this, that, you know, again, that's a good... The nutcrackers are a good example of one of those things where, you know, you have people who maybe, if they're Star Wars collectors, maybe they concentrated on one or two things, like, say, nutcrackers and, mm-hmm. you know, apparel or something like that, or jewelry. But then there are... The thing that never occurred to me is there are jewelry collectors or nutcracker collectors or, you know, novelty writing pen collectors who might have Star Wars in their collection, but they've got all these other things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of what this is the one we're going to be kind of the episode, I keep wanting to say issue because I think I'm on Hey Kids Comics, so we do these story arcs. That we wind up, you know, this will be the first time we do a cohesive multi-part, specifically designed to be a targeted multi-part. So we're calling it, you know, from one end of this galaxy to the other, and we're going to try to talk about as many types of collectibles as possible on this episode. Then get into things like some very specific types.
Now, is it too early to reveal to the listening audience that this is going to be a trilogy?
That's rather what I was stumbling around poorly. Is yes, we are doing this as a trilogy. This will be in three parts.
So it's going to be
this is literally episode one of the
trilogy. Oh, okay, okay.
Now, this one has actually been titled episode one, as you'll have seen you know, when this is up. On the thing, this is episode one of from one or essentially One End of This Galaxy, The Other, Episode 1, Expanding the Universe. Mm-hmm. And this is the ideas were helping you take a step into a larger world, as it were, of
just to broaden
collectibles and stuff.
To broaden the topic of collectibles beyond.
Exactly, and what are we thinking of when we say collectibles, that we may all of a sudden find ourselves thinking of a lot more things?
Well, just you personally, Cole, when you think of your collection, what are some like focus items, focus collecting in your personal collection? And then I can give mine. We can just kind of go back and forth.
Oh, you go right ahead.
Okay. Well, the main thing in my collection, and would be obvious to anybody who just walks into, you know, my art room and looks at my collectibles, would be the Star Wars comics. And I know we've touched on this a little bit before, when we did the artists of Star Wars, we kind of talked a little bit about the Marvel Comics run of Star Wars stuff. But beyond that, even, it's like, I really got into like all of the Dark Horse stuff, and now it's coming full circle again because now the license has fallen back into Marvel's lap, and so
exactly, yes, the circle is now complete.
Gosh, okay, we're doing a comic book
now.
Episode.
Now I'm back on.
We got to do a comic book episode called "The Circle Is Now Complete."
Yes, indeed, we do.
But yeah, I mean, my collection literally runs the gamut of, you know, the Marvel Star Wars, and includes the Marvel UK stuff. It goes into the Dark Horse stuff and everything in between. I mean, like with the and like I said, I'm big on just getting anything that is Star Wars and comics. And some of the most unusual items in my comic collection would be the little Marvel Illustrated paperbacks, which they produced 5. 3 of them are based on the 3 movies, but the other 2 are pretty cool because they have actual stories that were at the time only exclusive to either the UK Star Wars comic books or, of all things, Pizzazz. Do you remember when?
Oh, why does that ring familiar to me?
The Pizzazz magazine from the late 70s, early 80s, and each issue would run a Star Wars comic. And these little paperbacks ended up collecting the stories from Pizzazz, and so that's one way to get that story, unless you just want to track down all those issues of Pizzazz, which who in their right mind wants to do that?
Pizzazz collectors.
Oh, okay. the same, and I think there was actually Pizzazz Nutcrackers too that they liked.
Oh, collect. That's so true. If you subscribed, they would send you a Nutcracker for you. But also, there is such an amazing variety of ways you can go when it comes to collecting.
Yeah.
Another interesting one that never really occurred to me was patches. And that, you get into a really unique area there, because there are patches that were created, like iron-on or sew-on type patches, that were created commercially for mass marketing.
Uh-huh.
Have been off and on over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have patches that are, I guess what you'd call club-specific. That's one of these things that's really occurred in recent years, like the 501st Legion or the Rebel Legion, the Rebel Legion, the lot of different national and international-type clubs. Well, often for the big, like Star Wars Celebration and other big events, they'll create these multi-part patches where different chapters will sponsor a part of a patch. And I think there was one they did for Celebration 6 for one of the groups that was like a Death Star.
Yeah.
An embroidered Death Star thing. But each individual piece, if you didn't know it, you probably wouldn't realize that that's what it was meant to be. Because it took like 6 or 8 patches to make the Death Star. And so the idea was, you know, different chapters or different groups or different what have you would have these different patches. And, So the, if you like say maybe get a couple of the one section and you'd go find people and trade for the sections you don't have. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of interesting to see people there, you know, getting together and trying to piece together all these different patches that either put together a single entity like the Death Star, or they created, you know, the shape, you know, like a square or a triangle or whatever would be made up of multiple patches. And the hunt to find all that in a very finite amount of time, or, you know, make those contacts where you're talking to other fans and collectors and you're sending them to each other in the mail and things like that. That's a fascinating aspect of collecting.
Yeah, that is unusual, and it's almost like a collectible scavenger hunt or something. Now, you bring up the patches. I'm just kind of winging it here, but didn't they do either patches or possibly coins for as a fundraiser for the R2KT.
You know, and I'm glad you brought up R2KT because that's there. I think very recently there was a patch, and that's another thing. There have been some fundraising patches and stuff done by different groups.
Uh-huh.
And the R2KT, I think, benefits, is it Make-A-Wish, if I'm not mistaken? Or
Okay. That's
those organizations. That's uh-huh. And I think probably the first R2KT quote-unquote collectible was the action figure that was commissioned with Hasbro.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I do remember that. And for those who may not know the story of R2KT, it's basically a pink astromech, a pink version of R2D2. And it was, help me out, Cole, it was done as a fundraiser.
Yeah, initially there was the actual action figure was done as a fundraiser in, I want to say in memory of, I think by the time the
yeah.
action figure had come out, R2KT was sort of a kind of the behind the scenes story of R2KT. The real world story is that the founder of the 501st Legion, actually, mm-hmm. A gentleman by the name of Albin Johnson, had wanted to have a, you know, there are these guys who like build these prop accurate R2 units and stuff.
Okay.
And they wanted to build an R2 unit for his daughter that was in where the color scheme was pink,
mm-hmm.
rather than all your traditional on-screen color schemes. But she was actually had terminal brain cancer,
mm-hmm.
and R2KT was named her. His daughter's name was Katie. The mm-hmm. KT in R2KT comes from her name, and mm-hmm. Some R2 builders were trying to get this thing put together, the proper radio controlled actual R2KT, for her before she passed away. And I believe, unfortunately, they were unsuccessful with that. But they were successful in the sense that in her memory, R2KT goes around to children's hospitals and things like that. They have live mm-hmm. appearances and has become kind of iconic to the point of, I believe, even being inducted into the Clone Wars cartoon series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is a neat aspect to the Star Wars saga, I guess, that you know, albeit it stems from a tragic tale. But it just shows that, you know, out of that, something good can be done. They've done quite a bit to raise awareness and to raise funds for research and all.
Exactly. The R2KT, there was an action figure that was done as a fundraiser.
Uh-huh.
And there have been some pins and patches and such like that. And in that moment, these are fundraisers. And we've talked about this before on the show, on either this or the live show. Mm-hmm. That if you do go and, you know, try to track one of these things down in the aftermarket, that money isn't going anywhere but into someone's pocket. So I was suggesting that if you do, out of necessity, you know, if you're wanting to collect the R2KT things, perhaps consider also, in addition, spending a little extra money and making a donation
mm-hmm.
to the charities that would have been benefited from their original sale.
Yeah,
just to kind of keep that going forward as it were, after the fact.
Oh, definitely.
But, you know, oddly enough, R2K Teak becomes a whole genre of collecting in its own right, because they're, it has spawned so many different versions and different incarnations. And forgive us, we're number one, we're running late on this episode, and we had switched gears a few times on where we were headed with this, because we had it in the list and we'd kind of forgotten where we were, what we had in mind. So but, now we're back in shape, back in gear, so.
And off we go. But, you know, another aspect, you talk about things that don't normally spring to mind when you think of collectibles. This is an odd little, another little odd corner of my Star Wars collection are coffee mugs. And, it started in an odd sort of way with not so much a Star Wars mug, but an Indiana Jones mug that I got at the Disney parks way back when, and that became a little focal point of my then very small Indiana Jones collection. But as the 90s hit and more Star Wars things started to come on the market, I inevitably found myself starting to collect Star Wars coffee mugs of all things. And it's actually gotten a lot easier and a lot cheaper to buy them, because, you know, back in the day, if you found a Star Wars coffee mug, they were usually kind of pricey, because you were buying them at a place like Suncoast or just in the collector's market, like at a convention. But nowadays, it's gotten to the point where you can find Star Wars coffee mugs, you know, at Walmart or Target, so you're only spending like $5-6 a coffee for a mug.
That's so true, because yeah, they're the licensing for a while, because you had either mugs with imagery on them, or you had mugs with that were figural, if you
will. Yeah.
Like one of my favorites is I've got a few of them. I've got a C-3PO just because it's cool that they did it in the gold enameled paint, which means that it's deadly poison if you tried to use it as a, you know, day-to-day drinking vessel. You have the, and I've got Boba Fett and maybe, oh, a Tusken Raider or a Stormtrooper or something, I can't recall. I didn't want to try to get all of them. I just sort of wound up with a couple and got a couple that I liked. But I remember one that I would never display because it would just be too awkward looking was the Princess Leia, because it looked like Chilled Monkey Brain's Leia. So it's like someone just took the top of her.
Gosh. But you do own this, right? You do own the Leia mug?
No, I don't have one of those.
You don't?
No,
okay.
I think it's one of those. There's a few Star Wars collectibles that are just kind of awkward looking, and that's one of them. But you know, coffee mugs, drinking glasses, those are a couple of other genre of Star Wars collecting that, there are people who probably concentrate solely on that, so it does make their collecting experiences considerably cheaper than our own, because, you know, there are only so many mugs, there are only so many glasses or umbrellas, for example.
You brought the glasses, and that was such a big thing to get all of those glasses from Burger King when the original movies were hitting.
Absolutely. And then there, over the years, you've got other glasses that have come out in different forms and different ways.
And they even kind of revisited
glasses.
They revisited that a few years back when they were releasing, and unfortunately they weren't glass. They weren't made of glass, but they were plastic glasses that looked, that mimicked the old Burger King glasses, and it came with like a figure, and like the one I have in particular was a Revenge of the Sith quote glass, where it had that same design as the Burger King glasses, and it came with a clone trooper. It was like a little like gift set, and so that was kind of cool, because you can actually have that, you know, newer Revenge of the Sith quote glass along with your old vintage Burger King glasses, you know, and kind of helps complete the set, as it were, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just there's so many different subcategories to Star Wars collecting.
It's absolutely fascinating. I mentioned the Star Wars Super Collector's Wish book because it's, if you're keen on like discovering what all is out there, any given edition is great. The last editions were split into two. There was one that was everything but toys, and the other one was strictly toys, because there's mm-hmm. so darn many nowadays. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, in a way, thinking of that fact brought to mind that, you know, toys are oftentimes, because I'm a huge fan of the Star Wars toy lines and stuff at intervals.
mm-hmm.
Some of them are not that... some of the toys that have come out are not for me, but mostly they are. That, you know, when you talk about collectibles, I'm thinking toys or anything like I was talking about the intro. And mm-hmm. there are so many genre of collectible things because there were so many different things out in the world, from the collectible to the practical.
Yeah.
That sought out the license for Star Wars. And our next episode, in fact, we're going to talk about solely one genre that we have a friend of ours who is an avid collector, not an avid collectible, within that particular genre, and that's, you know, food stuffs and food-related products, restaurant premiums and the like.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
we were... you know, there's always plenty to
sink your teeth into.
Yeah, to zero in on. You know, and for a lot of people, it's a library of books, be it the novels or be it books
yeah.
about Star Wars, both the, you know, the practical and behind the scenes stuff and what have you. For others, it might be magazines, where, you know, things like the Star Wars specific magazines, and then things like, you know, how many issues of Time or. Oh gosh, like
or Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah, Entertainment Weekly or anything. You know, whenever Star Wars made a cover, not Reader's Digest, TV Guide. What is the little one? which was odd, you know. And even like Vanity Fair or one of those type of magazines.
Oh
back
yeah,
Episode One, I believe.
I actually
and Rolling pretty... Stone, you know, and
yeah.
so they're for magazine collectors. There, that's a whole genre in its own right, because there are so many magazines that
mm-hmm.
weren't Star Wars specific
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that you know still would be have that appeal because that particular issue
mm-hmm.
is a Star Wars issue. Famous Monsters magazine has many a cover.
Mm-hmm. Starlog.
Starlog, yes. And
uh-huh.
in fact, Famous Monsters even published back in the 70s a Star Wars Spectacular special that was a fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun read if you can ever find one. And of course, mm-hmm. this being a newsprint thing, it has that smell of rotting pulp. That I actually tracked one down a few years ago and I opened the bag. Like, oh, I was overwhelmed by like. Old librarian smell. And
old librarian smell. Wow. It's, you know, those, it's, I'm glad you brought up the old magazines, because it's fun to, if you can get your hands on an old Star Wars magazine or a magazine that references the old Star Wars, A New Hope. I have one in particular that I got as part of an eBay lot just a few years ago, and I think I got the lot because it had Star Wars comics
nice.
And other things in it, but that was almost like a bonus, getting this old magazine from like 1977, and it was a Star Wars magazine, but it's so funny to read those old articles, because it must not have been 77, it must have come out like in maybe 78 or 79 before Empire, but definitely after the Star Wars craze was just going out of control, because I remember in this particular article, they actually reference the continuing story. You know, there was no mention of The Empire Strikes Back, but
yes,
they do quote Lucas. They actually talk to Lucas and quote him in this particular article, where he starts to expound a bit more on what possibly is coming down the line.
Oh, nice! Very
and
nice.
So it's so funny to, and I wish I had read it before we did this episode, but if I'm not mistaken, he even references, you know, who Darth Vader was or will become. And
oh, interesting.
So Yeah, so it's fun to see.
Well, that's another interesting point about these. If you go back and look at older periodicals, is because it's a bit of Star Wars history as well. Because
yeah,
you can look at Star Wars in that time, like in that moment, in the 70s and the 80s uh-huh. and the 90s, what have you.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Exactly. It's like a snapshot from that era. But, yeah, you were mentioning, like, particular books. The behind-the-scene books are always fun for me to look through. I love anything that has, like, the concept art or anything that deals with the progression of, like, say, a certain character. I know there's – when you look through those old art Star Wars books – to see the progression of what Jabba the Hutt started as, you know, and what he became. Another version of the art books that are always fun for me in particular are the ones that came out during the 90s that took the artwork from the Topps Galaxy cards and just blew them up, you know, larger size.
Oh, I remember those, yes.
And those were always fun because as opposed to getting the artwork and on the little 2.5 by 3.5 card, you suddenly had it on this 10 by 12 page.
And then you also have the books like the old, in the 70s and 80s, there were books published, and actually even in the 2000s, mm-hmm. the Art of series, which was revived for episodes 1 through 3.
Okay.
Where it gave you a lot of the production artwork.
And, yeah.
As well as, you know, poster art from around the world and, I think in one of the early ones, like in the Art of Star Wars, there might have even been the drawing of Darth Vader by a 6-year-old or something like that.
Oh, really? Really?
I want to say that was the case, but, you know, that's rather it's fascinating, you know, to bring up things like the old periodicals and like the books, because mm-hmm. when you think of Star Wars books, you're maybe thinking of novels of the expanded universe, but mm-hmm. there's so many books, like activity books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any kind of old activity books, the coloring books
yes.
were a big thing.
Yeah, in fact I picked up an activity book at Celebration because it was just so cheap and it was like a Jabba's Palace thing. And it was hilarious to see some of the stuff that was in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from coloring pages to you know, making a mask of the whipped character, I can't remember, Jaquiel.
Now, was this a vintage?
Yes, this was actually from 1983.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Okay. I remember, for those who may not know, I used to be an art teacher, and I remember early on when I started teaching art, those first few years, I was trying to get my hands on different types of resources to use in the classroom, and of all things I got my hands on, I thought would be fun for the younger kids, was I got a hold of some of the Star Wars coloring books, and I would take the pages and I would, you know, photograph them, really? Make photocopies of them, and that way I could use them almost like as coloring sheets for the younger ones. Well, I remember it was so funny was my high schoolers saw them, and this is just pre-special editions it was about the time the special editions were coming out, but pre-episode one. And I remember the high schoolers seeing these coloring pages, and they would ask for a copy. And what they would do is they would take these copies of the coloring pages, and they would try to redraw that figure on the coloring page large size. And then one kid took one of the Emperor, and he did like this really nice, ended up being a nice like 20 by 30 acrylic painting of the Emperor, and it was based on a coloring sheet that he got.
Oh, wow, that's
you know,
neat.
So it's fun to see like how these old coloring books can still invoke creativity in kids later on.
Yeah, and it's also just kind of fun to go back and look at this. Like I said, it's kind of like having a piece of Star Wars history because it's what we were doing, you know, what manufacturers or publishers or what have you were doing in that particular period in Star Wars history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another aspect is things like the cloisonné pins and buttons.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, anything with a pin back.
Mm-hmm.
And there is certainly no shortage of that, especially courtesy of Walt Disney theme parks.
Oh, yeah.
Which we plan to do a show just on the Disney theme parks. But, you know, in addition to the stuff at the theme parks, there were, like, before there were Star Wars Angry Birds, there were Star Wars M&Ms. Were a thing that got overly marketed. And there were cloisonné pens of those. There were one of the my favorite things I've seen in the Super Collector's Wish Book pages was the little cloisonné pen of Obi-Wan Kenobi, a bag of McDonald's fries, and a word bubble saying you want something like, "May the fries be with you."
What?
Yeah, and it would have been probably distributed to McDonald's employees to wear during some promotion.
Oh, wow. That is... Wow. And yet that's in someone's collection, I'm sure. That's amazing. So, you were talking just a bit ago, we were talking about the books. One big thing that was on my radar, especially as a kid, and then later on, just for fun, trying to pick up things here and there for my collection, were the book and records or the book and cassette, you know, little sets. And that was such a big thing.
Yes.
Because in a way, they were almost like the old school radio plays. But then in other ways, they were just literally like books on tape. You know, it just depends on you know,
yeah, some were high production with music and sound effects. Others were just sort of like a rote reading.
Yeah.
You know, of what you could read yourself if you weren't, you know, the cassette was for the lazy or the spastic, to quote the Hudsucker proxy. But, yeah, you never know where my quotes are going to come from. But, you know, it reminds me of a related thing was in Indiana Jones book and tape where you're supposed to listen for the crack of Indy's whip, but they didn't think about the fact they were incorporating actual soundtrack. There were points, a friend of mine saying, you didn't know you were like three pages ahead because Indy was cracking his whip unrelated to the whip crack you were listening to.
Oh, that's funny. One of the books and records that I had forgotten was out there until I was poking around on the internet was The Planet of the Hoojibs. And if you don't remember the Hoojibs,
I remember the Hoojibs. They were first appeared in Marvel Comics, and unfortunately given further life.
Yes,
in a book, and there was also a book and record or book and cassette thing that was, I believe, actually tied into The Empire Strikes Back. It was literally like a precursor in a way, but they kind of, I don't know 100%, but I remember kind of realizing one day, like, oh, wait a minute, but there was like an encounter at Ord Mandel or something like that. And I just wonder if, you know, I'd be kind of keen to get my hands on the book for that sometime, just to see if that includes the bounty hunter that Han references.
Oh, wow. And this was a book and record set or book and cassette? What you're talking about?
Yeah, it, no. it was like one of those book and cassette or, you know, called something like Encounter at Ord Mandel or something like that.
Okay.
And I just wonder if that was meant to be, and now we're like, both, you know, trying to...
I'm just trying to, it's almost like, well, that's big nowadays, especially with like some of the comic book publishers, like with each of the Transformer movies, before the Transformer movie hits theaters, who has that license? IDW would come out with like the movie prequel comic miniseries.
Oh.
And, or G.I. Joe before the G.I. Joe movies came out.
Rebel Mission to Ord Mantell, a story from the Star Wars saga.
Okay.
And it was like a little children's book and cassette or children's book and record type of thing. And interesting enough, you know, the cassette, and I've actually found the record cover for the Planet of the Hoojibs, which we'll probably have to use for flavor art, because
see, I like the Hoojibs. That's why I brought it up, because I forgot that, because that was one of those creatures in the Marvel comics that, although they shouldn't be part of the Star Wars universe, you kind of are glad they are, almost like Jackson. You know, it's like,
Jackson doesn't belong, but yet he does. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's how the Hoochips are.
There was a Star Wars droid world of the Further Adventures. Where they were fighting the Master Cylinder from Felix the Cat, from the looks of one of the droids.
What?
It's the Master Cylinder. I can't remember what Master Cylinder sounded like, so I just went in with the whatever the hell the professor was. I can't remember his name now. All I can remember is Rock Bottom.
I remember, this goes right along with the book and record sets. I remember them releasing like a little, you know how they used to have the little, there were totes, but they were, all they were like, there were boxes with the little handle up top with the little latch.
Yes.
And they would pop open and you would slide your little book and records in there. I remember we had them in elementary. But I remember there being a Star Wars one that I guess was specific to collect all the different book and record sets that they came out for Star Wars that you could collect all your stuff in. So it's crazy some of the things that they came out with. I had no idea there was a book and record set that actually bridged New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. That's actually pretty interesting. Oh, man.
Yeah, in fact, I was kind of casting about here, and I discovered there were some golden books of Star Wars. I'm guessing they may have been from the 80s, because the Luke Skywalker one is Luke Skywalker Jedi Knight.
Uh-huh.
And then there's one of Princess Leia, where she's like kind of, she's firing a stormtrooper blaster, but it's sort of like she's also simultaneously posing for, you know, like modeling for a Sears catalog or something.
Wow.
And like all of a sudden, I want this book. I must have this book. It's called Princess Leia Rebel Leader. And I must own this to hang on my wall. But yeah, there was a golden book of Journey to Mos Eisley, apparently.
Isn't there a golden book? Didn't they do one?
Empire Strikes Back.
Of Chewbacca's family, which is a direct tie-in to the holiday special.
I think you may be right. I have not come across that yet. But, you know, talking about the book and cassette combos,
yeah,
also brings to mind the music.
And
records and 8-track cassettes and, you know, all the ways that music was available. And that's a whole genre of collectible where there are people who concentrate solely on obtaining like every version of, even down to the point of things, you know, you would get those in the 70s, especially in the late 70s, early 80s, where you'd get these record publishers who'd buy the rights to like a couple of dozen different bits of music that they could then publish outside of the official published full music sound score. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, one company would have the whole score from a Star Wars movie.
It would be like flip side would be, one side would be Star Wars, flip side would be everything else.
Yeah, like, well, they would have like two bits of music from Star Wars, but it would be like music of Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, and other sci-fi goodies or something.
Yeah.
And it was like, what? And you would have some generic artwork that wasn't from anything. You know, it was sort of like there's this like X-wing-esque rocket ship chasing a Logan's Run looking guy with a 2001 Planet of the Apes, but even that is viable for a lot of these collectors.
Oh yeah, exactly. I remember in doing research, Wonderland Records came out with one where it was the theme from Star Wars, and then the little, all the words beneath it were plus Star Trek theme, Bionic Woman theme, $6 Million Man theme, Superman theme. It's like they went through all these others. But what's so funny is, it's like you were saying, they had the two generic, lightsabers, but it's basically hands holding like they could easily be flashlights. But they have like, you know, the lightsaber beam coming out. But what's so funny about this particular image is they have the lightsabers, but in the background you have our solar system. You have the Milky Way.
Oh, yeah.
You have Saturn and Earth and the moon. but you're mixing that with Star Wars. So it's so unusual how they just literally, you know, they had just somebody getting a bunch of clip art, space clip art, and piecing it together.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was, that's the fun of those things. That's right. Well, they certainly weren't going to go all in, like,
you know,
pay for. And another genre, and we're kind of touching on what we were getting away from, but yet there's an aspect of, you know, a collectible that sprung to mind for me immediately when you talk collectibles that also has a sub aspect, and that is the knockoff collectibles. There's a whole, you know, you and I both own some really impressive knockoff Star Wars action figures, and I remember seeing some, like I've got a Galaxy Empire Chewbacca.
Uh-huh.
And I passed on a Galaxy Empire Snoova because I will not count in Snoova in any form, even as a knockoff. But there was some other one.
That's okay, because I got the Snoova.
Oh, okay.
I have that same set.
Years ago, a friend of mine called me and said, you got to get over to this flea market mall because there's somebody selling these Mexican knockoff Star Wars figures. And I went down and looked at them, and they were just awful.
Uh-huh.
And they were, you know, I didn't buy any because most of them were about to fall off their cards because they were that cheaply made.
Yeah. And that's how it is usually. It's like they use the worst adhesive possible to glue these bubbles to their cards. And inevitably, the cards, it's kind of like the records we just talked about. The cards are just pieced together by different images that they stole off the internet. You may have a picture of Darth Vader, but for some reason it could say Spawn at the top or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like just such a mishmash of images.
Yeah, or sometimes you'll find like Darth Vader sharing the same bubble with Superman and Spawn and a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle and a Power Ranger all on one great big card.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, I mean, who couldn't? Those things are always a lot of fun as well.
Oh, that's just a funny aspect of collecting I didn't think of, or the knockoffs, but you're right.
I have no doubt in my mind there are people who that's their thing, is, you know, they came across a knockoff at some point and, or two, and I remember being very tempted by some X-Men knockoffs, that I found years ago, just because I thought it'd be hilarious to, you know, do a little video piece where we talked about, you know, this is Professor Anne and this is this is Grogan, you know, because they had like the civilian Wolverine, and here's Red Eye, or, you know, what have you.
Red Eye. I will admit I do have a set of Ninja Turtle knockoffs that they're not even like knockoffs of the actual Ninja Turtles. They're knockoffs of the stupid Eric Larson, Jim Lee turtles that came out from Image when Image got the Turtles license for like a year. And they released like Raphael with a bionic arm and Leonardo with an eye patch or something stupid like that. So it's not even like the real Turtles.
Yeah. So, you know, it would be very easy to fall into that, or cereal box collecting. But then again, I guess that's what we're going to be talking about in the next episode, the next non-live episode, is the is things like cereal boxes. But like bookmarks, night lights, you know, if you really wanted to minimize your investment. But also, you know, a lot of these things are hard to find, like the paper fans and things like that.
Yeah. What about bookends? We were talking about bookends.
Very much so. In fact, that's one aspect of statuary that has exploded.
Yeah.
You know, I personally own the Han and Greedo face off bookends, and I wasn't able to get them back when they came out, and I refused to pay the sky for them. I just waited and waited, and eventually got it at a price I'd be willing to pay. But you know, now there's like the bookends where it's the Imperial Cog or the Star Wars logo,
or the trash compactor. Isn't that one of them? Isn't there a trash compactor bookend?
I think so. I think you're right. And there's definitely one that is like Jabba's palace in the area where Han is hung up. Han and Carbonite, and the other half is Boba Fett. It's that little alcove with the
Tauntaun. Oh, really?
Yeah, with the Tauntaun head. There is a
that's cool.
A bisected AT-AT.
Oh, so my gosh.
What an AT-AT might look like if it had that little accordion section on some city buses. You just put enough books in the middle and kind of, you know, blur your vision a bit. Or you can just imagine your head if you don't want to spend the money.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow, that's funny. So, yeah, the statues is a big thing. You know, the busts, the mini busts, you know, they're just, you know, there's, and when you talk about going from statues to busts, and then you start talking about, what are the little bust ups? And those aren't even ceramic at all, aren't they plastic? The little bust ups that came out in like about 10 years ago?
Yeah, they were plastic. The funny thing is, the bust up, the concept was they were supposed to be like little micro busts.
Yeah.
And the reason they were called bust ups is the idea was they would be shipped, packaged where the actual bust was made in like 4 or 5 pieces.
Yeah.
And you would get the thing and open it up, and then you would put it together.
Mm-hmm.
Like a little quick snap-together kit, almost.
Okay.
Well, the first wave, apparently nobody told the factory, and they were hell-bent to put every damn one of those together.
Oh, your kit? What?
No, yeah, you open those up, there is little to no assembly required.
Oh, no, I've seen them unassembled, but is that a real story?
Yeah, the very first wave, because we had them at the shop, and I was like, this is not 100% what you promised. I mean, it's a lot easier. And then you had to explain to people as the later waves came out, well, you actually have to put the thing together.
Wow. Oh, man, that's funny. Bust ups. Yeah, because we don't want to have to work too hard for our collectibles. We want them already pre-assembled.
And they were fun, and the neat thing was the initially, also, I think the first wave, they went the route... I'm trying to recall if they were... I believe they were all blind boxed, at least initially.
Okay.
And then they realized that may be the thing in Japan, but it does not fly so well in this country. And they abandoned the blind box packaging in later waves. And then they got really fancy, because they would be like cardboard boxes. And for one or two waves, they put them in what I call the little matchbox coffin. And it was literally like a plastic matchbox type thing, where you would have a plastic sleeve and then a little rectangular box that slid inside it, and then the sticker showing which character it was on the outside would hold it shut.
Mm.
They were nice, sturdy, little hard plastic.
What about the model kits? That was really big for a while.
That's a good one, too. Yeah, I was casting about trying to think of a few more things like apparel. But plastic model kits, yes, that was...
Was it AMT, is that, or who produced those?
I believe it was AMT who did the initial ones.
Mm-hmm.
And model rocketry, speaking of models, is another aspect of...
Oh, yeah! Oh, my gosh, it's like it's just... It just branches off and keeps branching and branching into all these little subgenres of categories.
And that's the fun thing, and that's kind of what we wanted to do, is sort of challenge your idea of what does it mean to be a Star Wars collectible.
Uh-huh.
And because so many companies jumped on that license over the decades, you know, it means a lot of things.
Exactly.
But yeah, the models though, yes, that's a great genre, a great you know, subgenre, as it were, because that the model kits, both the glue together and snap together types, there were, you know, all skill levels, all types, even down to like little tiny snap together kits that you probably, you know, snap three things together and you're done.
I've only owned one Star Wars model kit, and it was really cool to own it. I found it at a garage sale back in the 90s, and got it next to nothing. And that was the Jabba's Palace model kit, and it was really
I remember.
Cool.
Yeah, that was. Yeah. It wasn't much to build, but it was you got a lot of cool little stuff.
Yeah. It was neat because they came with so many little figurines of the different aliens, the different, you know, characters in Jabba's palace. You know, you had the Jabba the Hutt itself. This shows you how small the actual model was. Jabba himself is probably only about 2 inches in length. So that made all these other ones, like, you know, Boba Fett and all these others, would be just almost so tiny, just, I wouldn't say microscopic, but definitely, you know, the smallest little Boba Fett you'll ever come across. And so, yeah, that's a cool one to have, because there was even one of a Man-A-Man in there, you know?
Yes.
It's just crazy, crazy stuff.
Yeah, that had, like, literally everybody, like little Bubo. And...
Uh-huh, yeah. But, yeah, there's so many things. I mean, plush. The plush market has exploded as of recently. You know, you can get plush Wampas, Rancors, and Banthas. Colden, did you just more recently get a Bantha?
I did recently get a Bantha.
Finally.
The Comic Images ones, yes. Because they were...
After wanting one since the holiday special aired.
I know, and it's not the same. It's a little smaller, considerably smaller. And I actually just the other day got a really cool plush Tauntaun.
Uh-huh.
At a... godly, I'm going to get more collectibles at a Disney store.
Uh-huh.
They had some of the Black Series Star Wars figures for half what you're finding them anywhere else, for $10 a piece. Mm-hmm. And much to my surprise, I got Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Where? Boba Fett, where?
In fact, if you caught the last live show where I brought on air the... my giant Yoda that I just got, Colin just gave me as a gift,
oh,
and he's
yes.
About 2 foot tall, and that about a foot of that is his head. And so, but yeah, I mean the plush market has just exploded. Not just they don't do just the creatures; they do just little animated chibi versions of the characters too.
Yeah, and there's like, and then of course now you have the Clone Wars to call from, and now the Star Wars Rebels, and Shudder Angry Birds Star Wars.
Well, we don't have to talk about those.
The new M&Ms.
But it's crazy the amount of plush. I mean, one of the big things now that are just now hitting the market that I think are really cool are the fabrications. Where they're like the pop vinyls, but they're plush versions of the
oh,
pop.
Oh yes, exactly. Yeah, the vinyl figurines, the you know, of course that whole the pop vinyl thing is just insane. The sheer volume of licenses.
Another one is the pop vinyl figures or the Mighty Mugs.
Here's another one along the same lines. If you're looking for something collectible, you don't have a lot of space. One of the most popular collectibles for the those pressed for space are Pez.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Star Wars line, there I think about a little over a dozen distinct Pez. They keep getting re-released in different packaging.
Mm-hmm.
And a
yeah.
few of them were. Pantographed up into giant Pez with electronic music and lights and FUD and they're so big that they dispense Pez dispensers rather than individual Pez, or actually they packets of Pez instead of individual Pez. You know, the sheer volume of things, again, pewter was another pewter figurines, pewter spaceships, even the pewter
Parker? Peter Parker?
Yes, Peter Parker. Wow.
Pewter Parker.
Pewter Parker. I'll have to use that for the Muggerville universe over at Hey Kids Comics. But that's the secret identity of Steel Wall is Peter Parker. But, you know, the Rockcliffe was a company that made a ton of different pewter figurines, and there was also Star Wars chess sets done up in pewter.
Mm-hmm.
Of which I had the Probot, because I just am stupid silly for the Probot for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, another unique genre that I think there were probably easily 50 different varieties from some various manufacturers, toothbrushes.
Oh, my
from
gosh.
From the battery-operated toothbrush that Kenner put out, which probably had the worst actual toothbrush in the standpoint of, you know, being a good dental toothbrush, to... you know, Colgate and other companies putting out Star Wars themed toothbrushes of every design. It's you know, one of those little things you just don't think about when you think about collectibles, but there are probably people who you know, that's their thing.
Well,
from ceramics to pewter to plastic figurines to books to, you name it, it's a huge galaxy.
I it's so funny that you brought up the toothbrushes, because as soon as you said toothbrush, I immediately remembered the Oral-B Return of the Jedi ones. I was so desperate to get each of them, you know, because each of the packages, if you can look it up, have a different character, and I can't remember which characters were represented, but I remember, you know, the toothbrush came in those, you know, the long cardboard boxes. They were all different colors. They all each had their own unique character, depending on which toothbrush you bought. So that was a big thing back when Jedi was about to hit theaters. That was just like another thing to like get you excited.
Exactly. Yeah. Just sort of remind you, and you could kind of like, you know, try to look at your toothbrush as you're brushing.
You know what? And this kind of goes along with the toothbrushes. And I know Bobby Blakey has some of these in his collection, and you have a few yourself, Cole. Are the little paper cups?
The Dixie cups.
Dixie, there you go,
yes,
Dixie cups.
Yes, Dixie cups. I was very fortunate that our guest for the next episode actually brought to one of our parties here at the house an addition to my ever-growing collection, a Hammerhead Dixie cup. because he knows my fondness for Monet Don, a.k.a. Hammerhead.
It's a little bit more than a fondness, but we'll leave that one alone.
Yeah, what can I say? I'm a hammerhead to hammerhead. Hammerhead head, that was the term I coined for that.
That's okay, because I get greedy for Greedo, so, you know, it's all
okay.
The same.
Is that like being cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs? So.
Basically. Okay. Gosh. Oh, man. But, yeah, it's just... there's just no end to just the list of different things that you can collect. And I know in a past show, Cole and I talked along with Steve McCauley about, these aren't so much Star Wars knockoffs, but they were the Star Wars wannabes, the Me Toos.
Yes.
And you know, that itself is a category of collectibles for certain people. You know, they don't necessarily, are into these licenses, but I know myself as a kid, I had some sort of silver, it wanted to be an X-Wing, but it also kind of wanted to be a G.I. Joe jet, and it was silver and it had like a red canopy,
mm-hmm.
And it was just the right size to where you could use it for either your Star Wars figures or your G.I. Joes, depending on what you wanted.
Yeah, because that really wasn't so much a knockoff as a ripoff. But
yeah, but it was cool. I remember it being cool, and I remember it, you know, just it only invoked fondness in me is because it was something that was reminiscent of Star Wars or G.I. Joe, in which case, for me, was the two things I loved the most at the time.
It was sort of the best of both worlds, in a way.
Exactly. No, that would be Locutus aboard.
Oh, that's right.
So anyway,
since we've jumped genres a bit, and we've jumped all over this galaxy of collectibles, we're going to concentrate, as we said earlier, on the food-related collectibles. That is going to be in our next episode.
Uh-huh.
Food stuffs, things like, you know, different cookies or candies that were marketed as Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. So bring your appetite.
That's right. And I'm not eating those cookies or candies before we eat. No, I guess there really wasn't any, like, Star Wars Swanson's dinner or anything like that.
Well,
should have
been.
But...
you'll have to tune in next time to find out.
It will sell. That's right. And then the third chapter, we're going to we're trying to line up a guest. We've got the luxury of a little time with that one, but mm-hmm. we will definitely be talking Star Wars around the world. We're going to
mm-hmm.
talk about how Star Wars influenced a whole lot of collectibles worldwide, a great many of which we never saw here. We didn't see their counterpart here. It was solely for foreign markets.
I'm particularly excited about that one, too, because I have some ideas in mind for that topic. But the food one is going to be fun, too, because, we'll really sink our teeth into that one, like I said before.
Indeed. Who didn't see that coming? So we are, of course, coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. Be sure and check out all of the other great features, including Hey Kids Comics that we mentioned before. We will see you next week over at on Sunday at the Rancor Pit Live at DeepElemOnAir.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can check out the next chapter of this, the next episode, as it were, episode two, all about food and foodstuffs, and then 2 weeks or a week later back at the live show. So we're going to be all over the map, all over the galaxy. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. You can find us on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. We now have the Jedi Cole Universe YouTube channel, which we'll start to be adding some more stuff here very soon. And of course, you can if you're out in Dallas this weekend.
Would that be the JC YouTube?
It would be a JC YouTube, wouldn't it?
Sorry.
If you happen to be in Dallas this weekend, this Saturday, over at the Doubletree Hotel is the next North Texas comic book show, and Eddie and I, along with Taffeta Darling, will be doing a panel. And you can, it's just a great show to go to. A lot of great guests, a lot of Mad Magazine guests this outing.
Yeah.
A lot of really cool, some great artists in their artist alley, amazing collectibles to be found. And be sure and try to check that out. And if you want to know more about that, go to www.cap-tx.info. That will be the Convention Awareness Project Texas website, where you can find about that and many, many other conventions all year long here in the state of Texas. So scroll down to the 2014 listings, check out the weekend listings, and there you'll find the show where you'll find us. And where else can we find you, Eddie?
You can find me at eddiemedina.com. I'm also on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter. And yeah, just and the aforementioned North Texas Comic Book Show. And come see me, Cole, and Taffeta. We're going to be doing the panel by the poolside this coming weekend.
Absolutely, and we hope to see you there. And if not, we'll see you back here in 2 weeks with more Simple Tricks and Nonsense.